Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
And welcome back to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues. Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman sitting in for Tim and sitting in for Ed and sitting in for Abe.
Yeah, we're sitting in for everybody.
The list of those away is longer than what? But good to be with you today. We want to mention once again our boss, Tim, has been up in Washington, D.C. this morning for the National Prayer Breakfast for the first time. They heard from President Donald Trump, and we've been talking about that speech. It was a terrific speech, and I think, Walker, as we've been saying, and we're just talking with Sandy Rios, we're getting to know Donald Trump, a Donald Trump that simply didn't exist in our mind, quite frankly, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
He's running a whole lot deeper than what we thought. And as Sandy points out, it was a really good point that he is growing into the job very quickly.
Yeah.
And he's got a backbone to take on things that I don't think any other Republican or Democrat president has been willing to do.
Yeah.
And you almost wonder, okay, when is he going to give up on this and kind of sit back and be a regular president?
Yeah.
Because the guy's 70 years old, we're all amazed at the energy he has. Apparently, somebody's been saying 3 hours of sleep a night, and he just keeps going. Every morning when I come in, there's a new tweet out there.
Yeah.
He was tweeting about the riots at Berkeley last night. He was out there and saying, hey, and I'm paraphrasing, if I can paraphrase Donald Trump, hey, maybe here's another reason why, you know, a university doesn't allow free speech. They're not going to get any federal money.
Yeah.
He's out there doing this. I know it's driving the mainstream media crazy. And with us in studio right now, as he is each day, is Steve Jordahl. And you've been covering some of this media reaction to Donald Trump. But I want to talk to you first a little bit about, Donald Trump is out there, and one of the things he campaigned on, Steve, was, you know, we've been making some really bad trade deals over the years that have really hurt American workers, and we've already seen some of the plans that he has, but apparently we're going to get a visit from one of our big trading partners.
Yeah, Japanese Prime Minister Abe, Shinzo Abe, is coming to visit the White House, and He sees the writing on the wall after Trump after pulling out of the Trans-Pacific trade deal. So Prime Minister Abe is seeing that the trade imbalance with Japan is critically lopsided in favor of Japan, and he knows that he's about to get an earful from Mr. Trump. So he decided to come with hat in hand, and he is proposing. We were learning through the media that he is going to propose a sweeping economic cooperation between the two countries. He's going to bring this up. It's his idea. he is going to bring, the initiative would create several hundred thousand jobs and involve a $450 billion investment in this country.
Wow. That's amazing.
We're finding out who our friends and our foes are.
Yep.
This is a friendly move, and if you want to, Trump has this overwhelming ego and personality that is a winning personality. Thus, he won the election, and I think this is smart because if you're a democracy like Japan, you're an ally of ours, a historic ally. Then why not come and cut deals with us that benefits both countries? And so this is smart, very smart.
But I think it's also, guys. I think Donald Trump has signaled he's serious. Mm-hmm. These were not just campaign promises.
Yeah,
I mean, even before he sworn in, the carrier deal,
right,
in Indiana, and then he's been talking to the big auto workers. Yeah, we're going to add jobs at this plant and that plant, and this is what he promised the American people. You got to be impressed with the guy, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. He is sticking to his campaign promises.
And I think this shows the difference between a professional politician and a businessman, because a businessman is only as good as his word. If you don't follow up on your contracts, you're in court. If you don't follow up on your promises, you find the people who are willing to work with you are fewer and fewer, and you go out of business.
Yeah.
A politician can say just about anything they want on the road during the campaign and at the, when they go home to their constituents. And the constituents almost understand that half of the stuff that they say isn't going to be held.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, but hey, we love where your heart is.
Yeah,
it's changed.
Well, that's and this is what happened 2010. I mean, you had the Tea Party movement, which was birthed then, made a change in Congress, at least, didn't change the White House. But it made a change in Congress. But then those that were elected, many of those that were elected with the help of the Tea Party, they went to Washington, as you were talking about, Steve, and they turned back into politicians of let's make a deal, let's compromise.
They got swallowed up. The bureaucracy there was the power structure there is so huge and intimidating. There's a position in Congress in each party called a whip.
Yeah.
And the whip's job is to get the party in line. It put pressure on those that might want to vote differently than what the party thinks you are. He counts votes, but he's the main pressure valve, basically, in Congress, making these people do what the party wants. So it's hard. I just got off the phone this morning with Congressman Jim Banks, an old-time friend of mine, actually. We worked together at Focus on the Family. And he is now a freshman congressman from Indiana, and he's spending his first months in Washington. He doesn't have a real frame of reference with which to gauge, but he says the mood in Washington right now is anything is possible. We can actually do this stuff.
Yeah. And to answer your question, Fred, you asked, is this stuff going to slow down? Is he going to slow down and do status quo stuff? I don't think he is, because Washington is in such a mess. Even with Trump elected, Washington is in such a mess as far as what's gone on in past decades that Trump is going to have to spend the next 4 to 8 years fixing what's wrong. And I think it's going to take that long at least to fix it. And he's a businessman. He's a man of his word. He comes in and fixes things. And so I think he's going to stay busy. Every day he's going to be something new. What are you fixing today?
Drain the swamp. Drain the swamp.
I thought it was interesting. I heard, and I don't know if you guys talked about this last hour, but at the prayer breakfast, he told the people gathered there that he hopes to attend 7 more of those.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, he mentioned that. He's optimistic. The man will be 78 if the Lord tarries and see it all the way through.
Yeah.
But we've been talking about, you know, in 4 years' time, if the economy is really rolling along and these jobs are being created, it's going to be really tough for people to vote against that.
Yeah.
You know, if it's rolling along. Now, I mentioned a moment ago, Stephen Walker, about what's happened in Berkeley last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Donald Trump got busy on his Twitter account this morning and saying, you know what, if this not kind of nonsense keeps up, if they can't really honor the freedom of speech rights in this country, then maybe we take the federal dollars away, much like he's saying about sanctuary cities.
Right, sanctuary campuses.
Sanctuary campuses.
It's a deal, yeah.
So, and, you know, a few years ago, people would have said, yeah, that's just an idle threat. There it is. But you know what? Donald Trump will do it. He will do it.
And here's what you're going to see from the media. You're going to see pictures of students in breadlines, basically, not being able to be fed. You're going to see poor professors that don't have classes. They can't afford this service or that service. And as they did with the sequester, they will pick the things that are the most visible and the most heart-wrenching to cut. Mm-hmm. They have the ability, I suppose, with most of this money, mm-hmm. Although I believe I've heard that he will make sure that security is not involved in the cuts. Mm-hmm. But you remember when the sequester happened and the first thing that they did was shut down the World War II Memorial and then kept veterans out?
Yes.
Wow. Which was intentional.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah, they shut down some of the most things that don't even cost money to run. The World War II Memorial, you got like two guys working there, working the groundwork. I mean, that's something you can keep open without needing excess money.
But it's a very visible. They had the fence there. They put a fence up, or there's railings, and they had a sign there. Due to the sequester, we're not keeping this open.
Yeah.
And they were able to pin that on the Republicans.
Yeah.
Even though it was Mr. Obama's administration which decided what was going to come and go.
Yeah.
And the Republicans, for the longest time, have been scared. They've been running scared about what the media and what other people will say about them. So that's part of the reason they've been caving on all this stuff is they know that no matter who's at fault, they're going to be blamed.
Yeah.
I think that's changing too.
Well, Donald Trump doesn't care what the media
No.
His report. He doesn't. Yeah. I mean, he says, here's the truth, you know, the lying media. And again, this week, a couple of times when the cameras have been allowed in before he holds these meetings with business leaders, et cetera, you know, he'll come right out and say, you can't trust most of the media. A few of them you can trust, but you can't trust most. I mean, he is taking them on head to head.
Yeah.
He's doing it.
I think it's odd. We kind of lose track at how quickly things change in this country. 10 years ago, Donald Trump would not have been possible because Twitter, I don't even know if it was around 10 years ago. It certainly wasn't the force that it has become. Yeah. And there would have been no way for him to get around the media.
Yeah.
The only thing you would have been reading and hearing about was the negative stuff.
Traditionally, they've relied on each other, the media and the office of the White House. But I want to address the UC Berkeley thing that we're talking about. Most would say, and I would say this, at times in certain situations, well, the executive branch doesn't need to be threatening to pull funding because so-and-so won't do what they want them to. But this is a whole different story because this involves not just a political agenda. This involves illegal activity. Mm-hmm. You know, you have these sanctuary cities, and this is a separate topic, but sanctuary cities who are refusing to follow and enforce federal laws. That is worthy of not receiving federal funds. But to contrast, President Obama sent the memorandum out from his Department of Education, I believe, threatening schools, if you don't go along with this transgender junk, then there's a possibility that you lose funding.
Mm-hmm.
That I would say is wrong because that is a political agenda. There are no laws being broken at a local level. And in this situation with UC Berkeley, there are federal laws being broken. Well, yeah, because they harvest illegal immigrants at this UC Berkeley campus.
It's also, you got to remember, every dollar that comes from the federal government is actually tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
It's public money.
Right.
So to safeguard that or to use it responsibly, I think you can justify, even if there weren't the violence, they are still trying to suppress free speech, which is one of the – it's in the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that there should be free speech. I was having an interesting conversation this morning with David Barton, a historian, and we were talking about the difference and the similarities between Berkeley last night and Berkeley in the 1960s. Mm. Berkeley in the 1960s – there's a lot of similarities that are going on, but Berkeley in the 1960s was the birth – they call it the birth of the free speech movement. The Vietnam War was going on, and there was a lot of protests about what the government was doing, but it was the birth of the free speech movement, and it has kind of come around 360, 180 degrees now to where Berkeley might be known as the death of the free speech movement if they get their way.
Yeah. The only speech allowed to be PC speech,
right?
Politically correct speech. All right, got a few minutes left in today's program. I want to talk a little bit about one of our favorite politicians, Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
She was out singing to the moon the other night, but she was busy this week at a town hall meeting. Tell us a little bit about this.
She did. She was at a town hall meeting. I believe it was in Maine, but she was – there are some thoughts I saw online this morning that there might have been some planted questions she might have known the answers to. I have no doubt that she knew that this conversation we're going to talk about now is coming, but nonetheless, it was striking. She was confronted, and you're going to have to listen very closely. Get up close to your radios, folks, because the lady who's asking the question had laryngitis and is having a hard time speaking, but it is clear what she's saying. And let's just play this clip, and then we can talk about what just happened.
There are over 300 cities in this country that are sanctuary cities, like San Francisco. And you're not only choosing to disavow the law, but you're adding sanctuary to people who come there and disavow the law. In 2010, one of the illegals slaughtered my son.
I'm so sorry.
He tortured him. He beat him. He tied him up like an animal. And he set him on fire. And I am not a one-story mother. This happens every day because there are no laws enforced at the border. How do you reconcile in your head about allowing people to disavow the law? And the second part of my question is this. if you need to go home tonight and line up your babies, as you say, and your grandbabies, which one of them could you look in their eyes today and tell them that they're expendable for another foreign person to have a nicer life? Which one would you like to say, you, my child, are expendable for someone else to come over here and not follow the law and have a nicer life?
Well, I commend you for sharing your story. I can't even imagine the pain. No, I can't even imagine. There's nothing, I'm sure, that can compare to the grief that you have. And so I pray for you. I pray for you. But I do want to say to you that in our sanctuary cities, our people are not disobeying the law. These are law-abiding citizens. It enables them to be there without being reported to ICE.
What part about the word illegal does Nancy Pelosi not understand?
No, it's remarkable. And what,
we need to just so people are clear.
Yeah.
Sanctuary city, that term, what that means basically, a city has decided to protect people who have entered the country illegally.
Right.
Protect them from federal agents coming in and deporting them.
Right.
That's what a sanctuary city is. And Nancy Pelosi just said, you just heard her say, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, you just heard, you don't have to worry, ma'am. The people that we're protecting, they haven't done anything wrong.
Right. Well, and to add to the insult, it may have been a slip of the tongue or a turn of phrase that she wasn't aware of, but she said, these are law-abiding citizens.
Yes.
She called them citizens. And I know law-abiding citizens is a term that kind of rolls off the tongue. I just give her the benefit of the doubt that maybe she didn't mean citizen, because they're obviously not that. But that's kind of the mindset. It's also instructive to look at what's happening in Austin. This is the governor, Abbott in Texas, has decided to defund the prisons in Austin. The reason is because the prisons have decided that they are sanctuary prisons. They said that unless it is a sexual assault, a murder, violent crime, unless it was one of those three, or human trafficking, they weren't going to hand them over to ICE. Now, these are people that are already in prison. These are people that have been convicted of a crime violent enough or bad enough to land them in prison, and yet they are going to be protected.
You know, this is law enforcement officials complicit in breaking law. That sounds like criminal activity to me. If you're a law enforcement official and you're saying publicly that it's okay if you break more laws, we're not going to get on to you, that sounds like you shouldn't be holding that position.
It started, I don't know where it started, but it certainly got a boost under the Obama administration and his Justice Department when he coined the term or used the term selective enforcement, meaning we're going to choose to ignore certain laws. And I think that's fairly common. For example, I can drive 5 miles over the speed limit and a cop is not going to pull me over. Yes, technically I'm breaking the law, yeah. But they're going to selectively enforce that kind of a law. That's one thing.
Right.
But when you decide that you're going to selectively enforce laws based on your political views, that's a whole different ballgame. And I think that's kind of where people started thinking they had permission to do this kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, I want to say one thing too, going back to that dear lady and her story. The only news story that I saw coming out of that town hall meeting, that occurred on the night when President Trump announced his nominee for the Supreme Court. The only thing that I saw on national news was Nancy Pelosi talking about that, talking about the nominee. Here's this lady comes up and tells this compelling personal story of what an illegal person in the country illegally did to her child. Now, if this was all reversed, it was a Republican that was up there and
someone lost their health care.
Someone lost their health care and that sort of thing. That would be the story in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
The mainstream media, I will tell you, deliberately ignored the story that you just told us, Steve. Yeah. because it goes to the truth of what's going on in sanctuary cities, and the mainstream media is complicit. They are in bed with the Democratic Party to the point that they are willing to ignore a compelling story like this, an absolutely compelling story like this, because it hurts their cause.
And at the risk of sounding like I'm just sucking up to my boss, I'm so proud of what we do, that we have, as we are the media here, Fred, under One News Now and American Family News, we get to push back against some of that stuff. And it just thrills me to be able to come to work every day and to be able to tell a story like this that you're not going to hear in the mainstream media.
It
is, and it is why this country has elected Donald Trump, because well over 60 million people on a election day, November the 8th, said we've had enough. We've had enough of all of this. We're not going to listen to the mainstream media anymore. In fact, we don't need you anymore, mainstream media, which is driving the ABCs and the CBSs and the NBCs absolutely crazy, the CNNs and the MSNBCs.
And the Associated Press.
And the Associated Press is driving them crazy. And Donald Trump, you know, it, at the risk of repeating what a lot of people have said, there's a new sheriff in Washington. And this sheriff, he's big and tall, and he can take it. He's got a spine made of steel. He's not perfect. I'm not trying to draw an image out there of someone's perfect. But he's going to do what he promised to do for the American people, not for the Republican Party.
No.
He's not doing it for the Republican Party. I don't think he's even doing it to get reelected 4 years from now. He is doing it because I honestly have come to believe he believes there's serious problems in this country. He believes that past administrations, Republican and Democrat, have not done their best for the people of America. And he is saying, to go to his theme, we're going to make America great again, and encompasses all of these things that we've talked about in the last hour and a half.
And I want to go back to the illegal immigrant things. We can't have the weight of consequences of me going 5 miles over the speed limit and pulled over and getting a warning, and the weight of someone crossing our border is, you know, two different magnitudes. And I know you weren't proposing that; you were just being devil's advocate. And that's that is an argument though that the left brings up.
Right.
You know, and I've even heard people on our side say, well, you know, people give you a break and you get pulled over and they give you a warning. Yeah, but with people crossing our southern border, those people get on welfare. You know, there's cost associated. That's a lost American job. And so you have to weigh out, you know, and I'll be honest, I'm not in favor. I can't be mad at an officer if he doesn't give me a warning, if he gives me a ticket. We're going, even going 1 mile over the speed limit, justifiably, he can give me a ticket, and I can't argue with that. But what the left's saying is, don't even pull him over, don't even give him a warning, don't even give him a ticket, let him go.
Yeah. They're going 25 miles over the speed limit, and police, you might want to just go ahead and turn your lights on in front of them and give them an escort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a dangerous mentality.
Well, to repeat, guys, what Sandy Rios was just saying at the end of the interview we did with her last hour, we need to pray. We need to pray for President Trump. We need to pray for those other lawmakers in Washington that they do what they said they were going to do, and that they are protected, because the evil one would like to destroy what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And we need to be praying for them. All right, great to be with you today. Fred Jackson, Walker Wildman, Steve, thank you so much. What's on One News Now?
Top of the page, One News Now, we are looking at President Trump at the National Prayer Breakfast.
All right. All that and much more ahead here on American Family Radio. It's been a blessing for us to be with you today. We hope you come back real soon. Bye for now.